Here on Stolen Lives, we discuss brutal and heartbreaking crimes against children. Themes may include child murder, torture, and sexual, domestic, and child abuse. I do try my best to remain respectful for the babies in these stories and leave out unnecessary details that, honestly, none of us need to know to understand the frustration of why and how this ever happened. However, if you find any of these themes triggering, this podcast may not be for you. Listener discretion is advised. This week's story is a listener suggestion. Thank you to Anonymous on Instagram for bringing Braxton's story to my attention. This is also a recent story, and those responsible for this little boy's murder are awaiting their day in court. I've been checking, almost on a daily basis, to see if the trial has been scheduled, and it hasn't. Braxton's parents are still fighting to be released on bail. We all know the wheels of justice are slow, and it may be months before the trial actually happens. And I really didn't want to wait to tell this boy's story any longer. I have scheduled an update episode in September, so if the trial and sentencing has taken place by then, I'll update you all then, and of course in the Facebook group as well. February 2024, Bangor, Maine. 10-year-old Braxton Smith is rushed to hospital, unconscious and unresponsive. His parents acting confused as to how this could be the case, telling a story of a boy who was unwell all day and throwing up what smelt like dry pet food. What actually happened is still trying to be determined, with those allegedly responsible yet to have their day in court. This is Braxton's story.
The 10-year-old's vomit had an odor and appearance of pet food. Documents reveal that after medical staff took over life-saving measures, Bean said that the boy tended to throw himself on the ground when he had a, quote, temper tantrum, resulting in frequent bruising.
Braxton Smith was born October 23, 2013, in Bangor, Maine, to parents Jem Bean and Joshua Smith. Braxton was joined by a sister only 18 months later. This little girl's name was redacted in all the police documents I read in my research for this story. Her name is out there. However, since she wasn't involved in anything here and naming her won't add to the story, I'm choosing not to mention her by name. She has already lost her big brother in the most horrendous way possible. Both her parents and grandparents are in jail. She's been through enough and deserves her privacy. February 17, 2024, shortly before midnight, 10-year-old Braxton woke his mother, Jem Bean. He told her his stomach hurt and he was feeling nauseous. According to the affidavit, Bean said that Braxton had been acting not himself for most of the day, although she wasn't able to elaborate more on what she meant by that. Bean got out of bed and helped her son to the bathroom, putting him in a warm shower thinking that would help. But it didn't, and he collapsed, losing consciousness. In a panic, Bean took him out of the shower, but then he began to vomit before he stopped breathing. Bean would later tell medical staff that she thought the vomit smelt like dry pet food. Bean then started CPR, which appeared to work, at least for a while anyway, and Braxton started breathing again, although he didn't wake up. She called her husband's mother, Misty LaTourette, for some advice because she wasn't sure what to do next. After this, Bean brought Braxton into her room and placed him in between her and her husband, Joshua Smith, for the rest of the night. But then around 8 a.m. on February 18th, Braxton started to struggle to breathe again, and nothing was helping him now to breathe properly on his own. Ultimately, it seemed the best decision was to take Braxton to St. Joseph's Hospital. Upon arrival, Braxton wasn't breathing at all and was unresponsive. After 25 minutes of resuscitation efforts, medical staff were able to regain a pulse. Braxton was then transferred to the ICU at Eastern Maine Medical Center and placed on life support, while doctors tried to figure out what was going on. Although doctors were already suspicious that something sinister was going on behind Braxton's ill health. Braxton had bruises all over his face and body, too many of them to be caused by accident. There were cigarette burns on his arms and legs. There were ulcers on his back. Some of Braxton's hair was missing, like it was falling out or had been pulled out. Braxton was also extremely malnourished. At the time he was brought into hospital, Braxton was only 48 pounds or 21.5 kilograms. 7 pounds or 3 kilograms lighter than the lowest percentile for his age and gender. While in the ICU, Braxton continued to vomit, and nothing Bean or Smith were saying was making any sense. And all medical staff could get out of La Tourette was that Braxton was apparently a liar. Not helpful or even relevant. Given the unexplainable injuries and the odd behaviour from the adults present, doctors contacted both the Bengal Police and the Department of Health and Human Services. Which, interestingly, Jem Bean actually worked for the Department of Health and Human Services. Thankfully not with children, but at a psychiatric hospital in an admin position. Being the only people trying to help Braxton, doctors gave him a CT scan and they discovered bleeding on his brain and behind his skull. When confronted with this, suddenly Bean and Smith remembered seeing something that happened days earlier. That Braxton had tripped and fallen into an air conditioning unit. That he was a clumsy boy and he would fall over a lot. Unfortunately, their brain bleed was too extensive and despite doctors doing everything they couldn't save Braxton. At 9:13 p.m. on February 19th, 2024, 10-year-old Braxton Smith would be pronounced dead. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors. The Office of the Chief Medical Examiner conducted Braxton's autopsy. In addition to the many, many injuries we talked about earlier, the medical examiner also found evidence of sodomy, an injury that Smith would later deny any knowledge of, saying that he never touched his son like that. The medical examiner determined that Braxton's injuries were consistent with battered child syndrome, that this sweet little boy had been abused for months, manner of death being homicide. Braxton's mother, Jem Bean, father, Joshua Smith, and paternal grandmother, Misty LaTourette, were all arrested and charged with depraved indifference murder, being held in Penobscot County Jail in Bangor awaiting trial. And on July 26, 2024, all three entered pleas of not guilty. During their official police interviews after their arrests, all three would deny ever abusing Braxton. La Tourette admitted to suggesting the parents withhold food as punishment, telling investigators she regularly cared for Braxton, and that her son Smith would come to her often for advice. La Tourette describing the boy as being an attention seeker. She told police her grandson had been homeschooled his entire life and she was teaching him, but she hadn't allowed him at her house for the month prior to his death because of his bad behaviour. Bean would tell investigators that her son was stubborn and defiant, and that they had difficulty getting Braxton to do anything he was told without him first having a temper tantrum, and that these tantrums had gotten worse in the lead up to his death. She said that was how Braxton managed to be so bruised. Bean said they used tough love on Braxton, meaning he had to do chores to get time with TV or toys, and that if he refused to do what he was told, he would be punished by placing him in a timeout for long periods of time. But that hadn't really been working, so instead they had started restraining the boy with zip ties. That this was Smith's idea, and she didn't really agree with that and withholding food, but she was scared of Smith, that he had threatened her life before, so she didn't argue against the new punishments. Joshua Smith would tell investigators Braxton would often fall down or walk slowly, causing Smith to knock into him. He also admitted to pushing his son at times and playing with him by popping him in the chest. That one time when Braxton fell, Smith went to catch him and hit him in the face by accident. Braxton's mother, Bean, also said she'd seen her husband and mother-in-law hit the little boy on occasion. Smith told police his son was defiant and couldn't be left at home because he would get into things he shouldn't, like medicines. That they would zip-tie Braxton almost daily, tethering him to things like boxes, doorknobs and other furniture with his hands behind his back. But the zip-ties were looped long enough so Braxton could still use the bathroom. That Braxton had recently hurt his mouth from trying to chew through the ties. And that knocks me in the gut. This little boy was that affected by being zip-tied, which would have been not only uncomfortable, but potentially painful if pulled tight by his parents or himself in accident trying to escape. He was that affected he tried to chew through the ties. Smith didn't really agree with the point that they withheld food per se, that it was Braxton himself that would refuse food, because Braxton, being 10 years old, decided he was overweight and needed to diet. I'm sorry. 10-year-old homeschooled children don't decide that out of nowhere on their own. Regardless, Smith said that Braxton would refuse to eat, but then he would go through the trash later looking for food. Smith ended his interview with investigators by stating he felt responsible for his son's death because he was supposed to protect his son. But then he turned it around and blamed Braxton, saying it was his fault because he didn't eat decent food. Police then widened their investigation to neighbours, extended family and friends of the family. And interestingly, it was discovered that prior to the year before Braxton died, the family seemed relatively normal. The children were well-dressed, loved and very much taken care of. But by the beginning of 2023, no one outside of Bean, Smith and La Tourette regularly saw Braxton. One neighbour stating that she only had seen Braxton once outside and she thought he was just visiting the family. She had no idea he even lived there. Another neighbour would later report seeing Braxton pushing a lawnmower unsupervised. She was that concerned because he was so small that she continued watching him until he was finished to make sure he was okay. Finally, on the 4th of July weekend in 2023, around 6 months before Braxton died, there was a family barbecue and the host was chosen to remain anonymous. They have said they told police Braxton spoke to them about some of the abuse going on in the home. That on this day, Braxton was ordered to sit under a tree with the dogs and not allowed to eat. When this family member went to see if this little boy needed anything, Braxton told them he wasn't allowed to eat and that he was tired because at home he didn't sleep well as he had to sleep in the bathroom. But it would be when investigators forensically examined Bean and Smith's phone that they would find their most incriminating evidence. In one message, Smith wrote to his wife, quote, "There's some reason you couldn't be bothered to zip tie everything you were supposed to," unquote. Bean replied back, quote, "What did I miss? I did his ankles to the tote and his hands together behind his back," unquote. Smith would also send suspicious texts to his mother, quote, "The little one is super tired, and I'm going to slap him already, so that should be fun," unquote. Smith also telling La Tourette that he was going to kill Braxton. Lastly, there were text messages between Smith and his mother, reminding the other to make sure Braxton wore sunglasses when they went out to hide his injuries. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors. March 7th, 2024. A candlelight vigil was held in Braxton's honour. Dozens of mourners turned out to Bengal waterfront to remember an incredible little boy while holding candles. There was this hope that the attention to this story would end child abuse to the other children in their community. And that is truly the aim here. The more awareness we give these stories, the more we are likely to take the steps necessary to take action to report suspected cases of child abuse and neglect. And ultimately, that's why I do what I do. I would love nothing more than to run out of stories to share with you. Maybe if I would to continue then, have happily ever after stories of children who would go to new homes and live full and happy lives. Unfortunately, right now though, I currently have over 200 stories of abused and neglected children. And there are many, many more that haven't been suggested yet, and new cases happening every day. It gets overwhelming at times. When will this stop? When will children be born into this world and get to live lives with loving parents and nurturing households? It's really not an unreasonable ask. Quote from the candlelight vigil, "No child should have to suffer like this. We will honour his life taken far too soon."
There's a lot of grief here in the community.
The Bangor community gathered at Waterfront Park Saturday night to remember and mourn a life lost too soon and to call for state and community-wide changes.
We had a vigil for a 10-year-old boy named Braxton Smith. He was a victim of child abuse and neglect who recently lost his life from his parents.
In reading in the comments on social media, most people in the community mourned his loss but did not know where to put it. We didn't want to go into the trailer park and lay things down, but we needed a public place that we could speak up for Braxton and make sure that he was heard and make sure that the community could say a prayer.
With candles and balloons to be released in hand, attendees were able to grieve together.
It seemed like everybody was in a pretty somber mood tonight. Everybody was very quiet. We had a few people that spoke and they poured their hearts out.
It was just a place for people to share a sadness of something that touched each and every one of our lives.
I can mourn, grieve, and honor and respect the life of that little boy.
The immense emotion shared at the vigil sparked calls for statewide change. to ensure no child experienced the tragedy Braxton endured.
My hope, and I hope that everybody's hope, is that we can talk to the state, talk to DHS and our representatives about implementing changes going forward, such as doing more frequent home checks and speaking with families more often to check and make sure that children are safe and they're placed with people who can take care of them accordingly. A lot of comments about possibly having the death penalty being implemented for crimes such as child abuse and neglect and other heinous acts.
There were also calls for community changes, with an emphasis on togetherness and speaking up when suspicious.
And it makes us all be a little bit more vigilant about paying attention to the things that are going on around us and checking up on our neighbors and checking up on our children, not just our own children, but the children around us and the people in our lives.
It takes a village. We're all responsible. That this could have gone on for so long under the radar with this result is horrific.
A memorial was set up out the front of the home Braxton lived at. Braxton would later be described by those who knew and loved him as a sweet little boy. He was silly and loving. Braxton was quite athletic. He loved running and then have someone time him to see how fast he could run. Reading that out loud, I can feel the tears welling in my eyes. That's exactly what my little 10-year-old loves to do. Braxton actually reminds me a lot of my little boy. It gets me real deep in the heart. Braxton loved riding his bike, swimming and playing video games. He was a bright kid with a big future, before all of that was taken away from him by the three people who should have loved and protected him from danger. If you have your own thoughts and theories on the story we discussed today, or any stories we talk about here on Stolen Lives, please search Stolen Lives Podcast on Facebook, like the page so you don't miss an episode, and join the Stolen Lives discussion group to talk about your thoughts and theories. You can also talk to us on Instagram, Stolen Lives Podcast. If you like what you heard today, we would appreciate it if you share this episode on your social media of choice and subscribe and leave a positive review on your podcast app. I also have a Patreon where for as little as $2 a month, not only would you be supporting my podcast, but you will also receive not only this podcast episode early and ad-free, but all of my podcasts, Love to Death, Mysteriously Listed, and Beyond Your Nightmares, as well as one Patreon-exclusive episode a month. If you are interested and able, I will have the link in the show notes. Today's episode was researched and written by CS. Additional writing, hosting, and production was by me, Ali. Music is by Mayu.